Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Maximize Lab Profitability, Unleash the Power of AI with Practical Use Cases. The presenters are Mark Dorner, co-founder and CEO, Precise MDX, Dallas, Texas, and Sunil Khanda, Chief Product Officer, Synergen Health, Dallas, Texas.
All right, good morning everyone, and thanks for braving the 7:30 sessions. Note to self, next time get coffee and food here, right? So that way you guys can come and eat here. So a quick introduction, I'm Dumi Gunawardena. I'm one of the managing partners of Synergen Health. We are a RevCycle technology and services company. I just want to introduce our speakers today. First is Mark Dorner. He is the co-founder, CTO, and CEO of Precise MDX. It's a lab business management solution company which uses a lot of AI. Mark has been in the healthcare technology side for the last 30 years. He was the former chief architect of Relay Health before it was acquired by McKesson. I think he's built tons of healthcare solutions in the past, both as an entrepreneur as well as a CTO. And also he was born in New York, but he learned his computing skills at the elite computing division of the Israeli Defense Forces, which you guys have heard about lately. Sunil Khanda is the chief product officer, right? Yeah, of Synergen Health. He's been with us for the last 10 years. He's been in charge of building all Synergen's technology solutions, whether it's AI-based workflow management solutions, analytics, fintech, eligibility, and so on. Sunil has about 25 years of technology experience. Prior to Synergen, he was in a product management and client services role with a company called Net.Orange, which was acquired by NantHealth. And then he started his career with a company called Blue IT Technologies, which is Blue Yonder, which use AI-based planning solutions. So as engineers, if any of you have studied engineering, AI is nothing new. It's just that it has advanced in the last 5 to 10 years with these language models. But today's talk is really to give you an introduction and also actual practical use cases, things that are being done and how it can be utilized in your labs or your businesses. Okay, so go ahead, gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you. So this is a quick numbers on what we do as a revenue cycle company. I'm going to get into the core topic that we're going to talk about today, which is, the AI in healthcare. I know everyone heard about AI, and lately, like ChatGPT or the LLM-based models are very popular. But AI has been, the technologies that form, that build AI have been around for quite some time. So we want to talk about a little bit of what AI really is. It's basically a collection of different technologies, and the technologies provide capability for intelligence for different use cases. So machine learning, which is the broadest, which means that you're going to use lots of past data, learn from it, and when you get new data, you're going to use your learnings and try to predict or get insights from the new data. So this has been around, more than 20 years now. It's just that the tools that are available to do this now are more widely available. Previously, in a research environment, you could use some of these tools, but now everyone has access to these tools. So typical use cases you would see using machine learning would be analytics. The simplest use case is analytics. Like, you have collected lots of data, you look at specific occurrences or specific patterns, and then when you get new data, you see if you can find the same pattern. One of the other use cases is denial prediction. It could be early denial prediction or even post claim submission denial prediction. And typically, these kind of problems require machine learning, which is just learning from the past data. So the other subset of machine learning is really the deep learning. The deep learning is what uses like neural networks, kind of mimicking human brain. The idea is to again, identify patterns that are harder to notice for a human from the data. And typically, this is, it could be a multi-layer model. So what it means is that you're not just going to use like one kind of neural network, but you'll have a multiple layered neural network that's looking at different patterns, then scoring them, and then saying that, okay, this is the most dominant pattern, and this is what we're going to use as a primary item that we are diagnosing. So typical use cases, what you would see is imaging analysis. So I don't know if you're familiar with in the ophthalmology space. I remember like almost 15 years ago working with a company that was doing this image-based recognition for retinal issues. So they would scan, they would get images of retinas using like a DRS machines, and they would run these AI-based algorithms, and that would detect certain conditions based on the eye images. And at that time, like I think almost 20 years, they had already got an FDA approval. But it's used in a very, I mean, it's used in a specialty like retina. So imaging analysis is usually done using a deep neural network. Then if you look at patient diagnosis, right, like typically if you look at a patient chart, they have family history, social history, they have lab data, and they have any other past procedures they have done. So using all of this data, can you try to identify a particular diagnosis? So that requires a level of using a deep learning kind of model. Then patient monitoring. So if you look at the current trend, there's a lot of remote patient monitoring that's happening. And you would have a number of different sensors, wearables, at-home monitoring equipment that people are using. And you're collecting a lot of data through all these devices. So when you have these devices sending a lot of this data, you have to correlate a lot of this data and try to find something meaningful. So that's one of the areas where a deep learning models can help. NLP is natural language processing. A form of this has been around for some time. So the idea is to understand human language, natural language, and it's like it could be like speech, directly understanding speech, or it could be narratives that are written in patient records. So the typical use cases would be like transcribing, like this been around for some time, which is basically converting a narrative into a text and putting that in the EHR. Coding, if you look at EMT kind of environments, where a technician is basically dictating what happened during the trip, then you can use that information to be able to do the coding. The other area is like clinical literature reviews. So if you look at a lot of scientific journals where new information is getting published every day, it's understanding that and deriving relevant information out of extracting or deriving relevant information from those clinical literature is something that can be done using NLP-based models. Then the other simplest use case is chatbots. Like if you are chatting with a customer service rep, then it can understand human responses, interpret them, and provide adequate response to the user. The other category of AI is computer vision, which is analyzing images as well as video. Image analysis, I think most of you would be familiar with Google when it started identifying pictures of the person based on the based on your photo collection. That's done using image analysis. So some of the use cases that you can use, not only in images but video, is compliance. If you're having, let's say, a patient in a hospital environment and you want to make sure the patient is adhering to a protocol, you can monitor using video. And there are already some companies that are doing that. And even in a lab environment, if there's a technician or person working in the lab environment, you're trying to monitor if there's compliance on certain activities, You can do that through video monitoring. Imaging analysis, like I said, has been around for some time, but now you can see an expansion of use case in radiology segment where you have these images with very high resolution, DICOM images, where you can run different models trying to extract information. And I think there have been some tests done trying to compare like a human versus a machine. And right now, in some cases, the machine can detect more than what a person can identify from the images. And then adherence, like falling, if people are following a protocol. Simplest use case we have seen in orthopedic space is when people are sent after a surgery home. They have to go through a certain exercises or activities that they have to perform after that. And usually a video recording is done and making sure they're doing the activity the right way. Generative AI obviously is very popular now, especially with ChatGPT. Everyone is familiar with that. The idea is it's basically a large language model, and it can generate new content, human-like new content. And now most of the companies are investing in this, and I think the biggest breakthrough is a large LLM model ability to generate meaningful information using the past data. And that has been a major breakthrough. And ability to, and now there's a rapid expansion of using LLM models. So a lot of companies now, what they're doing is they're taking an existing LLM model, adding their own data on top of it, and they're using a combination of existing LLM model plus their data model. And one of the use cases is epiletus. So one of the simplest use cases, typically in a lab environment, all of you would have seen there are a lot of denials, and ability to generate an appropriate appeal letter based on the denial, a LLM tool can do really well because it can pull in information from all the relevant scientific literature and try to create a justification. And that's and where we have seen good use case of generative AI. Then patient customer service. So the patient customer service ability to explain things to the patient better, more like more human-like. That's something that a LLM model can help. Other big use case today we see is generating data. So especially if you're in a software development environment or if you're developing applications, you need a lot of data to test, right? Even any of the machine learning models that you want to develop requires a lot of data. So when you don't have data, what you can do is use this LLM models that can generate realistic data based on certain conditions, and that can be used for your even machine learning models. AGI is artificial general intelligence. This is a goal for AI to get to, and right now it doesn't exist yet. But that's what everyone is doing. And the idea is it can just be general intelligence, just like humans, or even better. So I'm going to talk about, focus more around rev cycle and how AI can help in the rev cycle area. So if you look at a typical process, you have order intake, which is how you get your order to the lab. It could be through a referral from a physician, or it could be a lab to lab. So you would be getting your orders through multiple channels. So the use cases for AI in the order intake area could be like scanning like cards, simple cards, like insurance or driver's license, and then converting paper to digital. Even though most of the labs have electronic ordering systems and interfaces to basically get in electronic orders, there's still paper that's coming in. So there's a lot of paper that comes through requisitions that a physician is sending or a lab is sending. So that has to be converted to digital. And usually it's a fairly manual process today. And there's a lot of application of AI to improve the productivity, and Mark is going to talk about that. Pre-billing is once you get the order and you have performed the test, you have the results, Now you have to prepare the data for billing. Right? So there are areas within pre-billing where AI can help. Eligibility and coverage discovery, like pre-auth checks, identifying which claims require pre-auth, coding, making sure that you have the right level of coding, and any early denial prediction. And I'm going to talk about in more detail about this. And within billing, typically most of the billing systems have some level of claim edits. You can enhance that with AI to improve the accuracy. And one area where I think a lot of there's a lot of usage of AI could be just around knowledge management. There's a lot of information that sits within an organization that's not very well organized. So you can use information like that and create a system where you can help train your staff better and also faster. Post-billing, this is once you bill out the claim. So what happens after that? So typically, in a lab environment, you do see denials. So working those AR, creating work queues intelligently, then denial resolution, creating appeals and submitting appeals, call management, like just talking to the payer, and using some level of automation and AI to be able to talk to your payer, and logbox automation. So typically a large lab would have thousands and thousands of correspondence that you're getting through logbox, and most of the times you're manually going through that, and there is application of AI in those areas to improve automation. So with that, and then patient experience. So patient experience part is really how do you communicate with the patient, not only on the results, explain the results, but also like how do you get payment for the patient responsibility from the patients. So there is application of AI in those areas. Simplest thing is chatbot. So today, most of the times, most of the times when a patient gets a bill, they're not even aware of the lab, right? Because they have gone to the physician. The physician would have sent the order to the lab, and suddenly after a while, they're getting a bill from the lab. And a lot of times you would receive calls, and how do you effectively handle those calls? We have seen with some of our customers using chatbots that are very effective. So there is application of AI for providing patient customer service. Then payment options. On the payment options side, if you have enough information about the patient, trying to provide them the right kind of payment options can definitely help in terms of collecting that payment faster. And we have seen that it can help if you apply some kind of intelligence into how you present the options to the patient. So with that, I'll ask Mark to present about the order intake process.
Thanks, Anil. Morning, everybody. So thanks to Sunil for kind of laying down a good foundation of the different flavors of AI and some examples of how it could be used. I'm going to flip over to kind of deep diving on a very practical use case of how people are using AI today in the labs. What's interesting is, and I don't know if everybody here downloaded the Whova app. So it's this app that's part of the show. There's kind of like a game inside. You get points. You level up. I made it to the leaderboard. Then someone spam posted a bunch of comments, and I got pushed down. I got pushed back up. So I think I'm in position 6. I hope there's a prize at the end. But one thing I did use it for is I polled people and I said, you know, do you think AI is it an opportunity, a challenge, both? So no one said it's just a challenge. Most of the answers were it's an opportunity for our lab, but some people said both. It's an opportunity and challenge. And that echoes a lot of what we hear from our customers today. We work with customers of all sizes, from UCLA to kind of regional labs. And you know, everybody knows about AI. Now we know a little bit more about the different flavors of AI. We know it's possible, but you know, when you run a business, you look at risk and reward, right? So AI is new, so there's risk, but it seems like people are benefiting from it, so there's a reward. So how do you start on your AI journey in your lab in order to gain the benefits without, you know, getting into all those scenarios where you're using ChatGPT to generate lab results and you get sued? So one you know, very practical and easy area is with the order intake. So we tend to focus more on the operational kind of financial side of the lab because there's a lot of repetitive manual activities that go on there that could benefit from AI and automation. We stay away from the clinical side because that's a little bit of a touchy subject. No clinician likes when machines give them recommendations or results. There are a lot of companies out there today where they're using the AI to do kind of assist, like AI in pathology, like, hey, I spotted something, take a look at it, because I'm just a computer, I'm not going to tell you what to do. So those are gaining ground, but it's very, it's very skeptical people about, can the machine do a good job? But when it comes to things like processing paper, people are like, yeah, the computer can do that. That's not a problem. And that's why I'm going to deep dive on order intake. So, reality is paper refuses to go away. So we're all in healthcare. I've been in healthcare for, I think Dee said 30 years. I think it's 28 years. I was like, paper won't be here by now. It's still there. It could be there because you're waiting for hospital IT to finish something in Epic, and you have 18 months till they finish the integration for you. It could be that, my wife, who's a physician, refuses to get off paper. I like paper. I like touching paper. I like the fax machine. I invested in fax stock. Whatever the case is, you're getting paper wrecks in, right? And you have a data entry team that has to key those in, and everybody in the lab's waiting for them to finish keying it in because, you have the specimen in your hand, but you can't process it till the information gets into the LIS. Now, there have been solutions around that for a while. There's something called OCR, which is optical character recognition, and ICR, but it never really worked well. So it does okay, but it doesn't do a good job because it's really focused around, is that the letter A? Is that the number 4? And trying to do a good job around that. With the advent of AI, there's a lot of advantages. So first of all, AI is actually really good at identifying handwriting and fonts. And you say, who cares about fonts? Well, a lot of the paper you get can be generated by an EMR. So it's not necessarily just a physician writing in a form. It could be something printed out of their EMR or the hospital EMR that they said, I'm glad you have a portal and integrations, but I'm going to put an order in my system and print it and put it in the bag. And here's a piece of paper. And it's easier to understand, but it's still paper. One other thing AI does well is it understands context-specific understanding. So it can say, this is a lab order. And I understand that this is the patient's information, and this is the clinical information. And it does a better job of not just identifying letters and numbers, but actually putting together scenarios of like, oh, this is insurance. I not only understand this is insurance, I know what pieces need to be here, and I can actually go out and get information to enhance it. Another benefit of the machine learning part is the continuous learning. So as you get more data in and more paper, it understands better like, oh, Dr. Bob likes to put the barcode sticker on the side of the form. But I understand that it's still the sticker. So I don't need it to be in a specific spot. I can understand that and over time get better. The ability to ignore background noise. So, a lot of the paper, some of it handwritten, some of it's faxed. Sometimes there's a cover sheet. Sometimes there's extra pages. Sometimes there's we had a lab who their scanner had like some dirt on it, so there was a streak on every page. Humans, do a good job in being like, okay, that's just noise. That's not part of my order, my requisition. OCR didn't do a good job of that. AI can do the same thing. It could be like, I know that's background noise. I know that's not something I need to pay attention to. I know it's a cover sheet. I don't care about that. I can throw that out. And lastly, it can automate a lot of these what we call pre-processing steps. So when you have paper, you have, did it get stand straight? What's the lighting light? So AI, again, can enhance that. And these are things that when you have data entry and people doing it, you think, oh, okay, I'm looking at it. I know it's crooked. I can adjust it. But like Sunil said, with the advent of AI and the progression of the tools that are available, you can do more things today. So even though nothing's like really new, the access to it and the scalability is new. One of the other things, if you think about AI, is that if you're taking whatever volume of paper you have to process and data enter, does it come in every day the certain same amount? Like I get 10,000 paper recs a month, and I have 20 days a month, so I get 500 a day. No, you get 4,000 on the first day of the month, and then you get none for 3 days, and then you get like another batch because, you know, that's how the pattern works, but you still have to staff a team because you're like, what if I get one of those days where all of a sudden I got a ton in? So it leads to inefficiency and very high cost. So it's not even a cost per rec. It's just I have to maintain a team constantly because I can't keep the lab backed up. And you know, we have labs who they'll say, yeah, I have a small team, and then if we get a whole bunch and I pull techs off the line and they're doing data entry and then I put them back on the line, and then you know that's not a very good use of a high paid employee's time. Diving into a specific case study, because you know, one thing we're going to talk about, and Sunil's going to also talk about after me, is like, what can I do today in my lab that'll have an impact with low risk and high reward? So we took an example of one of the labs we work with. So they're kind of not a very large lab. They do about 165,000 tests a year, or recs a year. But they did have a very high percentage of paper. Yeah, very high percentage of paper. I was always surprised when I hear this. I just spoke to a pretty big life science company last week. They said, oh, we do about a couple hundred thousand kind of precision, kind of oncology medicine recs a year, 62% are paper. And it's just the nature of the environment. It's like we don't get a ton of volume from each physician, so it's not worth doing all these integrations. And we have, you know, tens of thousands of providers who order from us, and we can't do tens of thousands of integrations. It would, you know, it's not feasible. So, you know, we go to the common denominator of paper. They track, they have about 7% orders with entry errors. So this is not problems on the data on the order, this is just human error, right? People are keying in stuff, onshore, offshore, it doesn't matter. There's errors, and then they have processes where they accession it, but then in the LIS, someone double checks it. I think someone even posted on the app that they have a process where they key in the paper, they put in the LIS, then they have a team that makes sure it's in the LIS correctly, and then they shred it. So they have to like double enter everything. They had an order entry team of about 10 people. That's what they needed to deal with it. It was actually not the worst I've seen, so they were pretty efficient. And because, you know, when we talk about, you know, practical use cases, you want to talk about ROI and dollars. So I picked, you know, an hourly cost. They were paying about $20 an hour, you know, fully loaded cost per order entry person. And, you know, I know that varies depending if you do it onshore or offshore, if you're in California where they pay that for people in McDonald's today. But you know, kind of using a number for a metric, and looking at kind of before and after introducing the AI. Now, this is something that's real world. They implemented it within a matter of days, right? It's not a very intrusive or disruptive process. It's basically saying the paper's coming in, it's going into the LIS instead of a room full of people. I'm going to have a machine and less people. So this is their volume. You know, they were able to reallocate the team and decrease the size to two people. So now they have two people who are doing what we call corrections, because the AI is never 100%. But what it's good at is it's good at doing 80% of the work and also identifying when it needs help. So it's able to raise its hand and say, hey, you know, this doctor, they wrote on a napkin. I've never seen a napkin before. Can you take a look? Or, you know, when they marked in those check boxes the test, they just kind of made a long line. So it looks like they ordered everything, but I'm not sure. The entry error rate decreased to less than 1% because, you know, if you're doing something repetitive, the AI is really good at doing it the same way every time. And the dollar impact was significant. So just for this kind of, I would call it a kind of small to medium lab, you know, their annual savings implementing this program was that much, which was a big number. And this goes to profitability because they, you know, hopefully are running a profitable business, and this is just extra money. The direct measurable ROI was in dollars and in the entry errors, but they got a lot of other benefits, such as the speed. So it did increase their turnaround. It decreased their turnaround time because they were able to process the rec so quickly. They had a document management system now, so instead of shipping everything off to Iron Mountain, they had everything electronic. It's easy for them to look up recs. And there was a lot of other benefits to the implementation. So this was an example of a real-world case of implementing AI that you can do today in labs, and it works with minimal disruption. I'm going to turn it back over to Sunil to discuss some other cases in the rev cycle side. And at the end, we'll leave a few minutes for Q&A and answer questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. So we'll dive into each of the areas within rev cycles, starting with pre-billing and use of AI. Eligibility and coverage discovery, I know every lab does this. And it's just that sometimes these are two disconnected processes in the sense they're not tied very closely to each other. And identifying the right payer, even though you do run an eligibility check and it says patient is eligible, a good example is Medicare and managed Medicare. So you see a lot of patients coming in saying they're Medicare. You run a check, it passes, but you really look deep into the response, they're on a managed care plan, and the address where you need to send the claims are different, and you need to ensure that you can extract all that information and put it into your claims so that you're sending the claims to the right place. And we have seen this with some of our customers where they had major issues, especially with Medicare. And when we put in a solution that can accurately identify the payer, on the back-end side, it significantly reduces the denial rate due to mispayer identification. Pre-authorization checks, and the typical process today, which happens even in lab or provider space, is you'd have rules set up based on the payer. So if you have certain payers, certain plans, based on the procedures that you're going to perform, there is a pre-auth requirement, right? What we have seen when you actually analyze the data is that some of the denials that you get due to pre-auth are outside those rules. So something that a rule wouldn't capture. So that's where AI can help, which is monitoring your past data and identifying those combinations where you're not catching as that requires pre-auth. Now, obviously due to pre-auth, it requires, you need to make sure that you have the pre-auth from the provider in a lab environment within a certain time frame. So the time becomes very essential. If you wait too long, then you no longer can get the pre-auth. Coding, using the right CPT codes and quantities. Again, as Mark was mentioning, some of this information has to be derived from the rec form. So if you look at the chain from a paper rec, you're putting the creating the order, and once the order is fulfilled, you have the lab results, and using that information, you're doing the coding. So this is an area where AI can help, making sure that you're not missing out or anything, and you're coding the right way. Early denial prediction. So early denial prediction is before you send out the claim, running analysis on the claim and saying that, is there a likelihood of getting denial? And in some cases in lab environment, you would get denial. It's a normal part of the process where you would get a denial and then you work through the denial. So you want to separate those pieces out, and it could be nature of the test that you're performing, and it could be deemed experimental, and you need to provide enough justification. So trying to identify these patterns early enough that you know you're not focusing a lot of time before the billing into those claims. So we're going to talk about, by applying some of this technology, what is the impact that we have seen across our customers? Okay. So in terms of impact, what we see is if you have an accurate or a robust eligibility and coverage discovery process, you could be saving like $25 to $2 per claim or per rec. And in terms of accuracy in payer identification, we have seen with our customers go up of 98%. And previously they were at around 80% in terms of accuracy in payer identification. And once we put in the tools, we see a significant improvement. And now any improvement in the payer identification results in less denials on the back end. And 50% reduction in time to bill, basically shortening that life cycle from the time the test was performed to the time that the claim is sent out of the door. It's reducing that amount of time. That's why we have seen almost 50% reduction in time. And in terms of team's productivity, because we are saving effort on the back-end side, we see an improvement of almost 30% in team's productivity to be able to take on the volumes. So in terms of billing, this is typically what happens within the billing system. Claim edits is an area where I think there can be more improvements, especially in a lab environment. What we are seeing is there can be further improvements in terms of running the claim edits. Usually, you would see in a provider environment that things are more expansive. And as I mentioned about knowledge management and staff training, especially a lot of the organizations have seen turnover in terms of people. So ability to get new staff, train them faster, and having all the information related to operations or revenue cycle in one place is fairly critical. And it could be simple things like creating playbooks and standardizing them, saying that, hey, if you are seeing this kind of denial with this payer, this is a course of action that you need to take, and making sure that people understand this and implement that is very critical. So what we have seen is like around 10 to 15% reduction in claims, claim rejections, which saves time on the staff to work through those. And in terms of staff training, we have seen improvements of 40% by putting in right knowledge management systems within the organization, in terms of bringing in new staff, training them, and getting them to be productive. Post-billing is an interesting area because most of the labs would see a good amount of denials, and how do you work those denials is very, very critical. When you have a large AR, I mean, how do you allocate your AR more intelligently to the staff? So what we have seen is the typical flow is you would allocate based on the payer or combination, but what we have used is basically just look at the past patterns and see which can be grouped together, and that's where the machine learning comes into play, is look at the past denials, group them into different buckets, and then assign the entire bucket of claims to one or to a set team that is constantly working on only that set. And that's where we have seen improvement in productivity, which is the team is really knows how to handle those set of claims. Then denial resolution. What we have seen is typically when you get a denial, the course of action could be you appeal, or you would make some corrections and do a rebill, or it could even be write-offs. There are certain portion of the claims that are never going to get paid based on the payer and the procedure combination. So how do you identify those ones so that you're not spending a lot of time on those claims? You might do an automated appeal once for those claims, and then if you don't get any response, you might have to write off. And that's, and I think most of you are familiar, that's course of action. You'll always have a small portion of the claims that are never getting paid. So the idea is, for the ones that are going to get paid, what is the follow-up action that you need to take? And how do you remove the guesswork from the team, right? So you don't want your staff to look at a denial and say, okay, let me figure out what I need to do, and touch the claim 3 or 4 times, right? And we do track, one of the important metrics is first-time payment rate, and also one-touch fixes. Like, are you fixing your denials just by one touch? And that's where AI can help. Appeals, like I said, appeals is part of the typical process that you see in a lab environment. How do you automate generation and submission so that you can handle a very high number of appeals with smaller staff? Logbox is another area where we have seen AI can help. And I know Mark talked about the EOB conversion, I mean, the paper to digital conversion. Same thing on the EOB side. Even though most of the times you're getting ERAs that goes directly into your billing system, you still get some paper from some of the payers. So how do you convert those paper EOBs to 835s and post them into the billing system? There are conversion tools, but what we have seen is even those automated conversion tools require a lot of effort. And I think with application of AI, it can improve the time it takes to implement such a tool. And correspondence is another area where we have seen a lot of manual effort. I know payers do it deliberately, probably, just to make sure it delays the overall cycle. With one of our clients, we see on some days like 40,000 pages of correspondence that we are getting. Now, imagine a person having to go through, right, a team of people having to go through those 40,000 pages trying to figure out what really needs to be done. And these are not EOBs. These are just correspondence coming back from the payer. So automating those kind of things have significant impact on the SLAs and on the team's productivity and cost savings. So what we have seen is there's a lot of impact on putting in the right tools on the post-billing area, like 15 to 20% improvement in revenue that we have seen with our clients, 4x improvement or 400% improvement in the appeals throughput just by automating. And in terms of collections and denial efficiency, putting in the places like where you efficiently allocate the queues to the right staff and also provide them with tools to understand what needs to be done. So a machine is telling them, like, for this claim you need to write off, or for this claim you need to do an appeal, or for this claim you need to do a rebill. So providing those kind of information takes the guesswork out, and we are seeing a 30% improvement in collections and denial efficiency. And overall, 10 to 15% reduction in denials through these processes. So in terms of patient experience, I think the biggest area that we see is explaining the bill to the patient. And sometimes, depending on the lab and the type of the test, it's harder for the patient to understand what type of test is performed. And this is where we have seen like better chatbots or AI-based chatbots can provide more information to the patient. And the other area is in terms of collecting patient payments. So typically, propensity to pay has been around for quite some time. But can you bring in other pieces of information about the patient and provide them personalized options for payments, right? And there might be cases where you're providing them prompt pay discounts. So you need to have tools that say, hey, you have like $200 outstanding amount. If you pay in 24 hours, we can give you a $50 discount and have the tools, necessary tools, to be able to do that. And we have seen that there's a significant improvement in the time to collect patient payments when you provide those tools. And in some cases, you had to provide hardship support to patients that are not able to pay the balances. So providing that enough information for them to look at alternate options can help. So in terms of impact, what we are seeing is a 60% improvement in patient collections when you put in the right tools. And 30% reduction in time to collect the patient payments. And if you look at the customer satisfaction scores or the patient satisfaction scores, it definitely has a positive improvement on that. So with that, I'm going to pause for questions. Yeah.
So we have time. Thank you, Sunil, for and every all those metrics and the percentages that Sunil presented equal dollars, and that's it's interesting in the lab and the healthcare industry. You do 100% of the work, but you don't get 100% of the money, which is very frustrating. So being able to improve that and collect more goes straight to the bottom line. We do have time for a few questions. If anybody has questions, just raise your hand and I'll repeat it. Gentleman in the back. So the question was, how do you know where to get started? What do they say, crawl, walk, run? So you need to kind of pick an area that's, I would say, least disruptive to the process and the flow and your lab. Measure the outcome, make sure you're getting your return on investment, and just grow from there. There was a question that someone had asked from the session ahead of time. It's like, how will this change the layout of my lab? How will AI affect the layout of the lab and the processes? And it really depends on which area. If you're getting into the clinical side, it's going to impact, how you run the tests and perform the testing. The example I gave for the paper has minimal impact because it affects a very kind of specific area. Rev cycle is usually on the back end team. So again, it affects a very specific area. Yes? Mm-hmm. So the question is, what are some of the major challenges that we've encountered implementing AI at labs? So it's interesting that it's not typically technology that's a challenge, it's change management. It's been my experience. I think Sunil will agree that the technology works, and it works well. It's just adoption and, depending on the impact of the organization, the change management of people We had a lab, for example, that didn't have a scanner. So that's a small change, but they didn't have a scanner, and they never scanned the paper X. They just kind of keyed them in and put them in boxes, and then if they ever had to go, they had to go look in the boxes and find stuff. So they just had to get a scanner. So it was kind of a minimal impact, but that was an example of a change.
Would you mind to share a couple of lessons learned, like how to increase the adoption and overcome these?
So the question was how to increase adoption and overcome, whatever challenges there are. So I would say the best thing is to just kind of start it out, like do a pilot, try it out, show that it's actually having a significant impact. That usually changes people's opinion. When they actually can experience the benefit of the AI with seeing that it's not disrupting everything, because people, they hear a lot about AI. I even had someone say to me, what's this Al? Who's this Al guy in the lab? And it's like telling a joke. But everybody has different opinions about what the AI can and can't do and what it's going to do for them and lose jobs and keep jobs. And so I think, if you implement one program that's very kind of impactful and you kind of present it back to people, they're like, oh, it actually works and it's not so bad and it's beneficial to the organization. So that's usually I've seen what's been successful. Any other questions? Go ahead. So the question was, have we seen any labs that are been able to decrease the amount of paper they're getting in? So there's a lot of strategies around getting rid of paper, right? So like I said in the beginning, it's kind of a necessary evil in healthcare paper. It's not always under your control. The way people have been combating it is, for high volume orders, doing integrations. An integration is great because you get rid of the paper, but you can't control the data you're getting through the integration, so it doesn't guarantee quality of data, it just guarantees you're getting it electronically. There's been, more providers willing to use kind of modern portals to put orders in. Not a lot, they more like to get results in portals, but some of them are willing to put the orders in if they see the benefit. But there's really no way of like getting rid of paper. Even if it's just transitional where you're onboarding a new group and you're gonna be on paper for 1 to 12 months, until you kind of get them into the electronic realm. But that's what I've seen out there. One final question? Great, so we ended on time. So thank you, everybody. This is an early session. I know, I appreciate everybody coming out here. We're gonna be around if anybody wants to walk up and ask any questions, and we're here the whole show, so still feel free to reach out and chat with us. Thank you very much.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.